You're listening to the Raise to Empower podcast. I'm your host, Ashley Kamajis, a licensed clinical social worker with a multi-state online therapy practice. I have a passion for empowering women and mom therapists to break free of the fear, overwhelm, and oppressive systems that hold them back from taking action and building the private practice of their dreams. My goal is for you to boldly believe in yourself as a clinician and business owner. If you're looking for a place to learn practice building strategy and skill while also claiming your own power as a woman and a therapist, then you're in the right place. Welcome to the show. Hey, listeners, before we dive in today's episode, I want to share a bit about an exciting resource available right now that you'll hear my guest and I talk about in today's episode. It's called Therabundle. As a therapist, you might feel a bit overwhelmed by the pressure to sustain a profitable business, wrangle paperwork, delve into social media marketing, and somehow take care of yourself in the midst of doing it all. So much to juggle, and without an endless supply of time, money, and support, how can we possibly balance everything? That's where Therabundle can come in and help. Therabundle is a meticulously curated collection of over 60 resources. These have been independently created by therapists and online business experts with you in mind. Therabundle is your toolkit designed to help you balance the various facets of your practice. And here's the exciting part. My friend and colleague Tamara Howell rallied us together to offer incredible resources at a fraction of the regular cost. For the next few days, from November 12th through 21st, you can get access to over $8,000 worth of courses, masterclasses, and downloads for just $100. And here are a few of the things that you'll find inside the bundle. Michelle Risser's Diversify Your Income with CEUs training. Callie Wolkin, From Insight to Intent, Reclaiming Your Career Path So You Have Time and Energy to Live the Life You Want. Jenny Hughes and Tawana Woolfolk's training on decolonizing racial and vicarious trauma, embodied practices for the self of the therapist. And Natalia Maganda's private practice brand builder. And I am so excited to contribute my course, Built to Run, a four-part system to get your online practice set up quickly. Now, that's just a tiny snippet of the range of offers that are included. There's everything from clinical skills to organization to personal development to affirming practice approaches in this collection. All of the contributions have been carefully selected to help you get your businesses off the ground, streamlined and feeling sparkly and fresh, especially if you know nothing about running one. Therabundle contains courses, masterclasses, downloads, workbooks, spreadsheets, templates, and knowledge from over 60 incredible contributors. And again, all of the resources in Therabundle are things that we wished someone had given us earlier in our careers for the amazing price of just $100. So don't miss out on this year's Therabundle. You can grab your bundle from November 12th to the 21st at therabundle.com/Ashley, or you can head to the show notes to grab the link. Trust me, this is one resource you absolutely cannot miss. Now, on to the show. Welcome to this week's episode of the Raise to Empower podcast. I'm really excited for this conversation with my guest today because I think it's a topic that many therapists may be curious about, but don't know much about. When we set out building a private practice, we do so because we want to have our own business and we want to be our own boss. We see the potential for what life can be when we're in control of our career, and we set out to make that for ourselves. But in doing so, we have the potential to build a lifestyle that can feel similar to the demands of working for someone else or being on the hamster wheel of agency work. We can still experience exhaustion and burnout. So there are ways to set up and establish our practice in a way that helps to minimize that, but that's not what this episode is going to be exploring today. Today, we're actually going to be talking about what if you reach that point of exhaustion and or burnout and you no longer want that practice anymore? What do you do? What are your options? So I'm joined today by my guest, Gabrielle Giuliano Vulani. She's a licensed clinical social worker, consultant, coach, entrepreneur, and educator based in Sarasota, Florida. She has been in the mental health field for over a decade, specializing in stress, chronic health conditions, and trauma. After scaling her group practice to seven figures and realizing her own burnout in 2021, she sold her thriving group practice and made it her mission to educate others on the impact stress has on our everyday lives. Gabrielle pulls from her experience as an EMDR and polyvagal informed therapist to utilize mind-body approaches to help others implement everyday strategies to manage stress and live their best lives. Gabrielle has coached for the SBA and Group Practice Exchange, is an international speaker, retreat leader, and has been featured in Authority Magazine, NBC News, The Daily Ohm, Bustle, and the Everyday Woman TV Network. When she's not working, Gabrielle is teaching Zumba, surfing, or reading a psychological thriller at the beach. Gabrielle, welcome to the show.
That was a great intro. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. You're welcome. I just read about you. So thank you. Thanks for writing a great bio.
Well, your whole piece before that, though, was very insightful. I've done a lot of podcasts and it's usually not like that. So I just wanted to mention that.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Well, and I think it's true. And, you know, we'll get into it in a minute, but I think, you know, we don't set out into this work thinking that we're going to burn out. But we always have the potential to create a life that we want, but it doesn't always go that way if we don't structure our practice in a way to kind of help prevent that. So, you know, we all have burnout in different ways. And so we'll get to in a little bit, what are some options with our practice when that happens? But for listeners who don't know you, I always ask guests, talk to us about how you got into the field of mental health. How did you know, like, I think I want to be a therapist. I think I want to do this work.
Yeah, so I kind of had an interesting journey getting into this field because I didn't start in with my degree. I actually went to school for fashion merchandising first.
Interesting.
And first of all, I graduated high school a year early, and like, who the hell knows what they want to do at 17 or even 18 anyway. And I just kind of had like a non-traditional experience, and I went to a community college first, and I was like, well, do I want to work in fashion or do I want to be a psychologist? I like both of those things. And I chose fashion, and that was the wrong choice. I moved to New York, and it was not a good fit for me. I'm very introverted and I'm very sensitive, and it's a very cutthroat field, and it just was not aligning and I hated it. And while I was there, I made a friend who was a social worker, and he worked in child protective services. And I was like, oh, that's actually what I want to do. That's like what I wanted to do as a psychologist, but I didn't really understand. And I think even then I couldn't put my finger on it, but I knew that I needed to help people in a way. Mm-hmm. And that was like my way, like my purpose and my way to serve. So that's what I did. I went back to school and I got my BSW, and then I got my MSW, and I worked in victim services first, which I really loved, but of course that didn't pay very well. And then moved into being a caseworker, in child welfare. And no surprise to anybody, that was the first time I got burnt out.
Yeah.
I don't really need to explain to anybody listening to this podcast why, but I did. And it was kind of like being in a toxic relationship. I felt like I couldn't leave. They even told me that. They were like, you know, your kids love you, your clients love you. What are they going to do if you're not here? And I found a different job though, and was inspired by somebody else to quit. Ended up working for an insurance company. I liked that job too, but they didn't really see what I was doing as essential. So I knew layoffs were coming. And I also just, I love the work that I was doing there because it was similar to what I opened my practice doing, where I was doing home visits with Medicare clients, but it was very short term. And I wanted to see more, you know, I wanted it to be rewarding and work with people more long term. And I kind of was at this place too, where I worked remotely, which was unusual at that time. That was before COVID. And I was like, I love this. And I can kind of make my own schedule. So the layoffs were coming. My friend who became my mentor was like, I'm quitting and I'm starting my own private practice. And I was like, I want to do that.
Yeah.
So I did. And here I am.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's funny. I feel like there's such common themes so many of us have, right? We're like, we don't really know what we want to do, but then we are like have this light bulb moment. It was like, oh yeah, this is the career that I've been searching for. And then you can get into it and the systems prey on you until you like, I mean, again, like just for the fact that I'm saying, like, well, you can't leave your clients. What are your kids gonna do? Like, ugh. It's just like preying on that part of you that, you know, wants to care for them, but also like not acknowledging what you needed as a human being of like, I need more care for myself, or I need more income or time.
Yes. All of those things. And I think too, like therapy had always interested me, and I guess I just didn't really, I think I just didn't know enough about it when I was younger. Mm-hmm. Like, I didn't understand how I could work with clients. And I think that was also really pivotal to me. Like, as I worked through this, I kind of just, a lot of times was like, oh, this is the next thing you should do. So I would do that. And then I kind of, when I found EMDR also, I was like, ah, this is like,
yeah,
that starts to make sense to me. But that also ended up burning me out too, but that's a different,
yeah, yeah,
story.
Well, so I'm curious, you know, you started a solo practice initially, it sounds like. How did you know that you were ready to start looking to build a group practice? Because I know that is something that comes up for people. And I think, you know, I've seen it with individuals who are saying, like, I'm starting to feel burnt out, but I need more money. And so, like, building a group practice, I think, is sometimes one of the options that kind of comes up of, like, I'll do this, and this mentality of, like, I'll work less because more people will be working, I think, is one of the beliefs that people have. It isn't necessarily true. But how did you start to say, let me explore that as kind of the next step of my practice?
That also kind of happened in a weird but organic way. I was at capacity with my private practice, and I was seeing a lot of clients, like 30-ish.
Oh, that is a lot.
And by the way, I was doing home visits, so I was driving to all.
To 30 clients a week?
Oh, yes.
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh.
Which is insane. And like, I don't know, my mindset was just so different back then. It was so just like scarcity and whatever comes.
Yeah.
Yes. And I work so differently now. But anyway, I was super full, obviously. And I kept getting phone calls because I had a niche that was very much needed. And a Zumba student who happened to be an occupational therapist was just talking to me about my business after class one day. Cause she would send us me clients sometimes. And I was like, you know, I'm really full. Like, I can't work anymore. I'm starting to get really tired. And she was like, oh, well, you should just hire somebody. That's like the natural next step to grow your business. I was like, oh, I didn't think that I could do that. Can like normal people just start hiring? Is that how this works? And she's like, yeah. And I know a social worker who worked with her home health company. She's like, who, you know, she loves working with older adults and she'd be a great fit for you. And I think if it had happened any other way, I don't know if it would have worked, but this person was the perfect fit. She wanted to start part-time. She was very flexible. She was eager to do the work. And, you know, I told her, like, I'm literally Googling, like, you know, what's an MPI to? Like, while she's signing the paperwork. And that's how it started. And as that went well, then I kept growing. But that's how it started. And I'm really grateful to her because she was with me from the beginning until the very end.
Mm, yeah. So like I kind of hinted at that, like, group building a group practice isn't always what you think it's going to be. So like, what was the most surprising for you, positive and negative, about going from having a solo practice to being a group practice owner?
Now this is such a like duh moment for me, and literally things that I talk about constantly and I do with my coaching clients, but I think the biggest thing that surprised me was I didn't understand how much of my own unhealed shit was going up running a business and managing people. And I really didn't at first, but then as I grew, I noticed, right? Like, you know, there also, I didn't have a business background. So I was doing a lot of this like on the fly, which is again, why I help people not do it that way, because it's not smart.
Yeah.
Maybe smart's not the right word, but it's not ideal. It will lead to more stress. But just like not having really clear boundaries and being a people pleaser who struggles with codependency and, you know, saying yes when I should have said no, and being really afraid of conflict, being afraid that if I, you know, spoke up, if I said something to, like, you know, for example, people not doing their notes, people not scheduling as many clients as they were supposed to, I was afraid to say something because I didn't want them to not like me or think I was a bad boss or not a good boss. And then of course what ended up happening is it just snowballs, and then I'm resentful and it's my fault that I'm resentful. And now it's been happening for 6 months and I'm like, I just said something 6 months ago. Now it's an even bigger problem. So a lot of those things came up, and I think that was really surprising to me. And I think a lot of people who start a group practice kind of do it like I did, like, oh, okay, this will be another way to like make extra money and keep growing and scaling. But you really need to understand that like your own shit, your own values, your own beliefs, how you do things, your own perspective is very, very connected to your body, your mind, and how you run your business.
Yeah, that like, especially if there's unresolved trauma, or if there's, you know, your own work in whether it's self-esteem or, you know, money mindset, or just, you know, that part of you that wants acceptance and self-confidence. Yeah. If you don't have that, you know, addressed, I mean, and I think that that shows up in struggles as a solo provider, but it's going to just be like magnified when you're running a practice that other people are dependent on you for then too, as a group practice owner.
Yeah. And looking to you like as a leader and for support, and it is magnified when you're a group practice owner because, you know, you're going to have 10 different personalities working for you, and all 10 of those people communicate differently and they learn differently. And you have to be able to manage that for yourself too. And that's a lot, like, you know, from a nervous system perspective, even to just think about trying to regulate yourself to all of those different types of communication styles and personalities. And of course there's things you can do to help manage that, but I think a lot of people don't consider that as they start to grow, and that as a therapist, you don't really have like a CEO mindset. You don't think about being a visionary or being a leader. And those things are also super, super important to having a successful group practice.
Yeah. Yeah. As you were in the practice and you kind of found yourself, I'm now an owner. I'm now a manager of people. How did that shift your caseload? Like you said, you were burning out because I'm working 30 hours. That's just seeing clients. We're not talking billing. We're not talking paperwork, right? So how did that shift, or did it actually shift any of that stuff for you in moving into like this ownership role?
It did shift, but I think I did it a little too late. And I remember like I was still seeing sometimes 25 clients a week virtually now, because this was COVID and I actually ended up moving out of state. And so I was seeing my clients from a different state. And I just remember like, again, such a dumb moment, but like realizing like I can't do all of this and like still see all these clients, like it's way too much. So I do remember that I like started tapering down but again, I had like 15 people working for me at this point.
Wow.
And so I was trying to get it down to like, I think I got it down to 12, and that felt a little bit more manageable. And then even more, I got it down to 10 and then 7. And I think when I sold, I was probably about 10 clients. And then I stayed on for a year to transition, which is normal. And by like the middle of that year, I was seeing like 4 a week. And I got that down to like 2 by the very
end. Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yeah. So it took time. It wasn't like this, okay, now I have this different version of my practice that like everything is smooth sailing and I'm not having to work as much. Like in many ways, you were probably even just working harder.
Yeah, and a lot of people, that's kind of how it goes, especially in the beginning, because you are kind of still in that growth phase and that like bootstrapping where it's like, ah, I still need to carry a caseload to like, my caseload is paying for the practice, as other people's caseloads build, and that takes time and that takes money too. So that's normal-ish. I definitely think that I waited longer than a lot of people, and even longer than I tell my coaching clients. So, but it's too much. You cannot be present for your staff, run your business, even if you are delegating quite a bit, and still have a full-time caseload. You can't do it.
When you look back, like, what were some of the key things that you started to notice for yourself that maybe started to kind of bring this question of, like, what would it look like to sell my practice? Like, what was kind of coming up for you that was leading you to question that?
That's a great question. And I think there were a couple things. One was this mix of anger and irritability, but also apathy at the same time. So I was really quick to snap. And I remember, like, my staff would ask me for something and I would be like, go fuck yourself. I'm not answering that text. It's at 8 o'clock at night, whatever. Like, I remember feeling that and also being like, is that the kind of boss that I want to be? But like, I couldn't, get to that place of compassion because of where I was. And the apathy was kind of with that too. Like, I was irritable, but I was also apathetic. Like, I just didn't care. And I also felt like that with my clients, which I hate sharing this, but I think it's important, is that I did feel apathetic. We'd be on a telehealth session, and I was like, I wonder if I would start browsing on Amazon if they would notice that I'm not paying attention, and looking at the clock and being like, oh my God, like, what am I supposed to, how can I sit here for another 45 minutes and hear this story again and again? And like, I also knew, again, red flag, like, is that the kind of therapist I want to be? So I, and a lot of things that were out of my control, just like with COVID and all the changes, and like we took Medicare, of course, and there were like a lot of uncertainties about covering telehealth and like, people wanting more money, not being able to pay them more, and like all of these things. And I remember talking to my friend who's in a different field, who's like also a mentor and a coach, and she was like, maybe you could just sell it. And I was like, oh, do people buy these things? And she was like, yeah, they do. So we ran some numbers, and of course, it's never enough money. And I was like, I don't think it's enough. I'm just gonna stick with it. And so my solution to that was like to delegate more. So I already had like a VA slash admin, but I talked to somebody internally and promoted them to be like an assistant clinical director to try and take things off of my plate. But I just think, I don't know if they weren't the right person. I think it was probably a mix of they weren't the right person and maybe their vision was just different than what I had. And so a lot of the things that I didn't want to do, they didn't want to do either. So then there was like more pushback and more tension. So that just ended up not working. And at that point, I just was kind of like, I was so burnt out. It's like, if somebody gives me a dollar, they can have this whole thing, or I'm just gonna lose it. But what ended up happening was I actually was on vacation and I got a phone call and they left me a message and they said, we represent an outpatient behavioral health clinic that's interested in acquiring your business. Give us a call back.
And this was just like out of the blue.
Yeah. So literally manifested this. But I thought it was spam and I was like, I'm not responding to this. But my same friend, she was like, no, like that's how a lot of these deals happen. So I ended up, of course, researching and Googling and looking at them. And then we had like a little meet and greet and it was legit. And that's who ended up buying my practice.
Which is, again, wild. Like, you, it sounds like, had kind of closed, like, the mindset to that, that, like, no, I'm not going to go, like, seek out selling it. But then it kind of came to your doorstep, which is, like, the universe knew what you needed before you even knew what you needed.
It totally did, because that, I really feel like, was what changed the trajectory of my life so much. It helped me do so much more spiritual and inner work that has led me to a more aligned life that I'm living now.
Yeah. Thinking about where, you know, you brought up the question of, like, can you sell a group practice, you know, or even a solo practice? Like, is that a thing? And I'm curious, if someone's listening to this and, like, I hadn't thought of that, why sell a practice versus just say, I'm closing my practice? Like, I mean, obviously there's a financial benefit to it to a degree, but, like, why consider selling it versus saying, you know what, I'm retiring, or I'm closing it? Like, what's the difference and kind of benefit there?
Yeah, that's a good question, because obviously financially, like, especially if you're a group practice, then you're going to get some money from it. But there are other reasons too. And those could be, you know, maybe you want to keep growing, but you're at a plateau. Maybe you don't have the money to keep growing financially. Like, maybe you need to bring on more leadership, but you can't afford it. So there are, you know, everything is negotiable. So you could also not sell the whole practice. You could sell part of it. You could get an investor who is investing and can help you with that. You know, I mentioned this earlier, that I stayed on for the transition, which is really common. And then I wanted to be done, but there are also people who, they sell the practice and then they stay on and they're like, I don't have to deal with the shit that I don't like to deal with now.
So yeah,
can do the billing and the hiring and worrying about all of that stuff. And I can just be a therapist and get a paycheck and get PTO and good health insurance. Or I know people who have sold and have stayed on in, like, a consulting or advisory role, or they do something completely different. They're like the clinical director, or they do business development. So there's a lot of opportunity and different reasons there. And maybe, you know, your legacy, the community, like, that was important to me too, to not completely close, because we had such a reputation and we're so well known in our community for helping Medicare and Medicaid clients. And people knew that. People knew we did home visits. Even post COVID, we still did a little bit of in-home sessions, which people really liked. So I knew that if we weren't there, I was like, well, then who's going to help these people? So
yeah,
a little bit of that too. But if you're feeling burnt out, or if you're feeling like you want to go in a different direction, it's an option to bring other people in to help you get to the next level or build the next thing, so that you're not doing it all on your own.
It doesn't have to be like, I'm just shuttering the doors, or I'm just doing this all, you know, on my own. There are other options besides, like, just get, like, not just giving it away, but, like, selling it completely. Like, you could still have involvement there, or making sure that it continues on the way, like you said, like, your legacy of what you created, what you started to establish, what you want to continue to see moving forward.
Yep, exactly.
We've all been told we need to network in our private practice, but no one actually tells us how to do it or what to say. Enter Comprehensive Connecting, effective scripts that expand your networking community and actually fill your online practice. This free guide will give you effective scripts to connect with fellow clinicians, medical professionals, and community stakeholders to build strong networking relationships that will help fill your practice. In this guide, you will get tips and tricks for building relationships that will lead to referrals in your practice, real-life examples of messages used to connect with referral sources, and customizable plug-and-send scripts for your specific practice needs. So download your free scripts guide today by going to bit.ly/compconnecting. When you were talking at the beginning, one of the things that surprised you in going into group practice was, like, your own stuff that hadn't been dealt with. If someone is kind of thinking or toying with this idea of, maybe I want to explore having a group practice, recognizing that you're going to be in a you're in a role of leadership if you are in solo practice, but it's definitely a different role of leadership if you're in a group practice.
Yeah.
What are some things that someone should ask themselves or kind of like do some self-reflecting to see if like maybe this is an area I need to work on or explore some things around before saying, yeah, I'm going to go headfirst into building a group practice?
The number one thing that I always think of is, what is your why? Why do you want to do this? And you need to know that, because on your most stressful, darkest days, that's going to be your North Star. That is going to help you remember why you are doing this in the first place. So know what your why is. Is it because you want to reach more clients? Is it because you want to provide a place for clinicians to learn and have a work environment that doesn't foster burnout and high productivity? So know your why. Know your values. I think that's another thing that people don't think about a lot, is you probably have some sense of your own personal values, but your business has values also. That kind of goes with your why. So
yeah.
And how does that align with your personal values? Because if your personal values are, I don't know, that you, you're super independent and you don't want people to be dependent on you, well, then you're probably not going to want to start a group practice of provisionally licensed therapists, because they're going to pull out from you.
Yeah.
That's important for you to know about yourself. And then kind of, those are kind of more deeper questions. But I think also just knowing, like, what is your tolerance for risk? You know, do you have somewhat of a CEO mindset, or know what that means, where you are being a visionary, where you are delegating, where you, you know, don't ignore the bad things, but know that entrepreneurship has a lot of ups and downs. And do you have pretty good coping skills to manage those downs? Did I say, do you like managing people?
I don't think that one was mentioned.
Oh, well, then that's the next one.
Yeah. Because that is a big part of it. It's not just like you go see your clients and then I'll just collect part of your paycheck. Like, that's, it's more than that.
Exactly. And I think a lot of people are like, well, I can just run the practice that way, where they are all like pretty independent, but it never, ever will work that way. They're going to need stuff from you. And I'm not saying this in a bad way, but people are selfish. They're not thinking about you and all the shit that you do on the back end.
Yeah.
They don't like that. So anytime they come to you, it's going to be about themselves. And, you know, you have to be okay with like managing that too, that it is kind of lonely at the top and you have to hold a lot.
Yeah. Well, it's different than like, let's say you worked at an agency and you're the director of the clinic, right? And your employees are coming to you and saying like, I'm needing X, Y, Z. And like, yeah, they're coming to you and they're going to do the same thing if you are the owner running the practice. But there's a different level of pressure where like, if you're the group practice owner, like you have a different stake in this practice and you... it's personal because it's yours, right? And like, this is probably going to make or break things for you financially if the practice is not thriving, versus if I'm working for an agency, yes, they may look at cutting my budget, or they may look at, you know, laying off some of my staff, or I may lose my job, but it's not my business. And so, yeah, employees are probably going to have some of the same needs, desires, gripes, but it's going to feel differently when it's your practice, because it's your baby. It's much more personal for you.
Exactly. And they don't see it that way. They being like your employees, you know, and I think that's a really big thing that people struggle with when you're a group practice owner, is like, people are going to leave, and people get very triggered when somebody puts in their notice. And I know that, I've been through that too, but it's normal. They're always going to leave, and you just need to, you know, it's not personal, right? You probably left your own job. You did leave your own job at some point and started this. And so that's the natural progression of things. Nobody stays forever. So it hurts the first time. It hurts the second time. And by the third time, you have a process in place and you're like, okay, this still sucks, but now here's what I'm going to do and I know how I'm going to do it. But I've just seen people like really spiral when somebody quits, and I'm like, it's wish them the best, you know?
Yeah.
That's fine. That's what they're meant to do. And I know the first time it happened to me, I was taking it personally and I was like really angry and upset. And like I said, after that, it's just kind of like, good. I want you to grow. I want you to go do your own thing or whatever that is, because that's what you're meant to do. You're not meant to stay here forever.
Yeah. Yeah. If someone is like listening to this, or they've been thinking about selling their practice, whether it is a solo practice or whether it's a group practice, what are some things for them to kind of start thinking about and exploring? Like, where do they start to look at, like, one, how do I do this? And two, like, what does it look like? Like, how do I find these people or businesses to sell a practice to?
Yeah. One thing that I would mention too is like, remember that people in other industries start businesses to sell them. So we don't think about that, but that's also a thing.
Yeah.
That happens, and it's okay. And it's allowed. But you really, even if you never want to sell your business, you should always act as if you do, because that is going to make it more profitable and more efficient. And it's very similar to like buying and selling a house. You work with mine was a little bit different because somebody came to me directly, which does happen, or you might have other connections, or you could find connections through somebody like me, who I know people who want to buy houses. And then you can kind of not have to deal with a broker's commission. But generally what happens is you work with a broker and they look through everything. They value your practice because your practice does have a valuation. It is worth something. It's an asset. And they put it up for sale, just like a house. And they talk about, you know, instead of that you have a brand new renovated kitchen, you have a thriving practice of 35 clinicians with, you know, contracts with the schools or whatever. So they kind of list all the nice things that make your practice attractive. And one of those things that, again, like kind of goes back to the CEO mindset, is that your practice cannot be dependent on you. So that's important, because if you're gone, then the money is gone. The clients are attached to you. The staff is attached to you. If all of those things go away, then there's no revenue coming in. So that's something to think about, because again, I know that a lot of us therapists have a hard time delegating and giving control, and we think we should do everything, but that's actually going to help you in the future. That's just one thing of many. But there are a lot of other things. You want to be organized. Obviously, you want to be profitable. You want to be really good at tracking your data, KPIs, which are key performance indicators. So you want to know how many people called this month, how many people of those calls booked, how many of them stayed. Do you have outstanding claims or outstanding invoices? How many no-shows did you have? How many 90837s did you bill last year? Like, these are all things that you need to track as a business owner. And that's what I go through in my course on how to sell your business.
And so that you have a course to help practice owners prepare and get their business ready to sell.
Yes. So I called it From Start to Finish, because it is from the beginning to the end.
Yeah.
And I talk way more in depth about, you know, how the process actually goes. Like, how do you actually do it? What do you need to know? What things do you need to have in place to prepare? What do taxes look like? What makes you more attractive to a buyer? How do you value your business? What do they look like? What's a purchase agreement? What's a letter of intent? And then what happens afterwards? And all that actually is a part of Therabundle this year.
I feel like that fits so perfectly with what you're talking about as far as this mindset of you should always be like preparing your business as if you were going to sell it. You may not sell it, but that if you're starting a practice solo or a group, especially some of the things that you're talking about, like, how do I collect this data? How do I have these things tracked? How do I keep these things organized so that if I'm going to sell it, hopefully it's not from this place of like utter burnout, that like I don't have the bandwidth to like figure out how do I put this information together to make this look enticing to somebody, but that like maybe I am starting to feel burnout, but I have it organized, or like I just don't want to do this anymore. I want to do something else, but I have it running in a way that it is easy to,
yes,
to like make it look like an enticing purchase.
And prevention is so important with this too, instead of being reactive. And I think we know that in a lot of areas in our life. But if you are super burnt out and you're like, want to sell this right now, yet your taxes are a mess or you haven't been profitable, like people will sometimes come to me and they are deeply, deeply in debt, haven't been profitable. They're having a hard time making payroll and they're like, I just want to sell it. Like, that's not, you don't have anything to sell. That's not, would you want to buy that? Probably not.
Right.
Those are things you can't just slap together at the last minute. Those are things that happen over time. So that's why it's so important to prepare in advance.
Yeah. Well, and again, this course will be part of the Therabundle offer this year. And so, you know, if somebody is in a position where they're like, well, I'm just kind of starting out, like I'm either just in solo practice and I'm thinking about a group practice, or, you know, I haven't even started a solo practice, like this would be a great course for them to get as part of the bundle. Because again, thinking about like, you may never go into group practice, but what if you do? And how do I set things up and establish things from the beginning so that if/when I'm ready to sell, like you said, it's kind of in that prevention place, that it's like in, you're set up for success and not doing things out of a place of kind of reactivity, but no, I'm making this decision to sell it because I want to. And look at all that I have ready to go.
Exactly.
If listeners want to connect with you outside of Therabundle and outside of listening to this episode, where's the best place for people to find you?
Probably on Instagram. That is where I like to be most active, and connection is one of my core values. So I love just building community. And I'm very easy to find because of my name, but my Instagram handle is at GJV Consulting. And I also run a pretty active Facebook group for people who want to learn more about just group practice stuff or even adding additional income streams. And that's called Create an Abundant Group Practice.
And then I think you have, we'll list it in the show notes, a like guide for income streams for therapists. Can you talk a little bit about that?
I do. So I put that together because I have been a part of a couple of big therapy summits talking about that, because I have over 15 income streams, which is like,
wow,
the quintessential ADHD brain. And I know a lot of us, again, are burnt out and we want to do more, and you can do more. I think sometimes we just need somebody to tell us that. You don't, unless you want to, but you don't have to sit back to back with clients for an hour all day, every day and make money. There are other ways that you can use your skills, and that always feels good. So I put together just a little like guide workbook to help you understand how you can use your skills, what you're passionate about, and how to actually put something together that you can monetize.
Awesome. And we'll definitely have that linked in the show notes. I really appreciate you, Gabrielle, taking the time to chat with me today. I think this is a really interesting topic, and I know that listeners are going to get so much value from this. But thank you so much for being a part of this, and for listeners to definitely check out Gabrielle's course in the Therabundle. And I would love to have you back some other time for us to continue this conversation.
I have lots and lots to share, so I appreciate you having me. I'm looking forward to more connection with you and to your listeners.
Yeah. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much for listening to the Raise to Empower podcast. Check the show notes for all links and resources mentioned in the show. If you found today's episode helpful or inspiring, be sure to share it with your therapist friends. And don't forget to subscribe to the show and leave your 5-star rating and review. It truly means so much to me and will help us get our message of empowerment out to other women and mom clinicians. And I'd love to connect with you in our Facebook community. So check out the show notes for the link or head to bit.ly/raise to empower to join us. I'll see you back here next week.